Hello everyone. My name is Louisa Morse. I am the Division Chair of STR, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to this Scholar Practitioner Seminar on Insight to Impact, Synergizing Practice and Research in Strategic Management. This event is hosted by the Membership Engagement Committee of STR. They run a number of exciting events, both online and at our annual conference. The committee is headed by our membership engagement chair, Andy Wu from HBS, who's also here today. So thank you, Andy, for everything you do for STR. This year, STR are running several symposia and events on impact and relevance, and therefore we have this nice background on impact and relevance. So please keep an eye on the STR homepage or social media for advertisements of the next event. I'm sure that we're going to have a very interesting conversation today, and thank you very much to the panelists for being here and participating. And of course, a big thank you to Bucky London Business School for organizing this session. I'm going to hand over to Bucky to introduce the event and the speakers of today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Louise. Super excited to get us started in this inaugural event. Welcome to everyone. My name is Bucky Oyedeji, as Louise just mentioned, and I'm a member of the Engagement Committee at the STR Division of the Academy of Management, also an Assistant Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship at the London Business School. We're super excited to have everyone join us today. Now, the purpose of our gathering today is two-pronged, really. It is our first intention, really, is to start a conversation that allows us to gain firsthand insights into how research truly informs practice. We have brought together a panel of people who have a really good, well-trained experience carrying out strategic management research, but chose to go back into practice and are deploying the things they learned through their training in real-world contexts. We want to be able to learn more about their experience and share the insights that they've gained with us as a group. And then secondly, it's also to develop a community, some sort of forum within the strategy division where practitioners and graduates of strategic management can also connect, discuss, and continue to access cutting-edge research even as they deploy them in practice. So we're hoping this will be a forum that connects not just practitioners to those of us who engage in academic research, but also the scholar practitioners, as I'm calling them now, into this three-sided sort of community where ideas can generate, where we essentially share experiences and develop some sort of mutually beneficial relationships that maybe that are all still centered around strategy. Our hope is that today's session will get us going in that direction. It will foster a deeper cross-pollination amongst these three groups of people, and at the same time, encourage mutual learning between scholars and practitioners and academics in our field. So to that end, by the end of this session, I'm going to place a link in the chat for us to go to. If you're someone who is interested in being a part of this forum, where we have these continued activities around this issue, please feel free to fill that form out and we'll get started. So to help us get going, we have three scholar practitioners who have generously offered their time here today to jumpstart this sort of forum conversation that we're talking about. But before I introduce them, some quick housekeeping items. In terms of format, we're going to have the first 5 minutes focus on questions that we are going to be answering that we already have for the scholar practitioners. But then after that, we will follow up with a 15-minute Q&A session. Now, that Q&A session, we're going to handle it by having you type your questions in the chat. So as we're having the early conversations, the first 30 minutes, and questions come up for you, feel free to put them in the chat. Andy and I, during the Q&A session, will handle them out and we'll get to answer those questions at the end of that. And with that, we will get right into it. Please welcome our panelists, Dr. Andrea Floyd, Dr. Surabh Ghosh, and soon to be Dr. Jorge Fuentes, as they introduce themselves and let us know a lot more about their backgrounds, their experiences, what they do now, starting with Dr. Andrea.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. Thank you all for joining us to hear this exciting research topic and how we move these needles forward in the right direction. But I am Andrea Floyd, as mentioned, I serve as the program manager for a division called partner management with a company called Maximus. Within that division, I basically have the very exciting opportunity to bridge relationships between what we call our subcontractor small business partners and making sure their missions are aligned with our overall strategic goals as well. Within that role, I basically utilize a lot of forecasting, a lot of mentoring, as well as opportunities where we do find opportunities where academic research is important and having that practical knowledge, as well as that academic side of understanding those things and how we bridge those together to make an impact on not only our partnerships, but also our local communities as well. So it's a little bit about me, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Andrea. Sorup, Dr. Sorup, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm Sorup Ghosh. I'm currently an economist at Audible, which is Amazon's audiobook service. And at Audible, I support various initiatives relating to pricing, content strategy, and also the management of our internal experimentation programs. So my work on the experimentation program actually follows from many ideas that I first outlined in my dissertation, which was on experimental approaches to strategy and innovation. And I graduated in 2021 from Harvard Business School, and Andy was actually one of my dissertation chairs who's on the call today. So great to meet you all.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And then we'll move on to Jorge, who will be getting his PhD in a couple of months right now. Jorge.
Thank you very much. As you mentioned, my name is Jorge Fuentes. I am from Latin America, especially, or in particular, I am from Chile. I am in Santiago de Chile right now. Actually, I have been a practitioner for 25 years. I have been working in intellectual property matters from the very beginning of my career. And I decided to start my PhD thinking about the possibility to answer some questions about the role of intellectual property in the innovation ecosystem. Motivated in particular for some question provided by our clients here in my company. Later, I will tell you more things about this opportunity of being a PhD student. But nowadays, in this moment, I can tell you that I work in an IP law firm here in Chile, the largest law firm here in Chile, which is called Kerry. And as you mentioned, Buki, I expect to finish my PhD in the next few months. So thank you very much for this invitation. I hope to be helpful for the audience. Oh.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, Jorge, and all the best with those last few months. Quite a number of us on this call know how intense that process can be. So with that, we're going to move into our question session for today's event. So we are thinking about how we bridge strategy, how we bridge the theory of strategy with the practice of strategy. And all three of you have had opportunity to dip your toes really far into the theory of strategic management, into how we think about things from an explanatory perspective in strategy. And you've also had the opportunity to also practice and put some of these things into a hands-on experience. The quick first question I'd like to ask generally, perhaps starting with you, Sorup, is what role do you think scholar practitioners, these are practitioners with PhDs, play in bridging the gap between scholarly research and the practical implementation of what we learn or what we come up with in scholarly research in the field of strategic management?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to dive into that. I mean, you know, as context, I often go back to, you know, Simon's ideas in like the sciences of the artificial, where any sort of design-oriented science, whether that's like engineering, business, medicine, they must be rooted fundamentally in practice and not just some sort of notion of natural sciences. And, you know, there really has been no greater satisfaction in my post-PhD life than seeing many of the ideas that I developed in the dissertation implemented in practice here at my job at Audible. Mm-hmm. So for instance, a core idea in my dissertation was the necessity to test new strategies as interdependent elements that when combined together lead to superior performance. And that really runs counter to the conventional wisdom that you should test ideas as independent elements in order to fully tease out their incrementality. That's the baseline view that we have here in tech. So a simple example for my pricing work at Audible was when we started to validate these ideas was, you know, at Audible, we
he's from Stanford, he's working for Google Audible.
Go ahead. Sorry, please mute if you are not the main speaker. So if you can please continue.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, no problem. I'll just walk through a simple example to talk, kind of explain what I'm after. So, you know, at Audible, we have a complex business system in which you can become a member and use a credit to get one book a month, or you can purchase a la carte purchases. So when I joined, we were just starting initiatives to test lower a la carte pricing points that would be more attractive to customers. And initial tests showed that lower pricing had limited lifts, and we were trying to figure out what was going on. Mm-hmm. And eventually what I learned was that rather than being displayed that a la carte price, are shown a membership offer on the detail page for a particular book where it'll say try for free for a month after you become a member, right? So when we would review these results with leadership, I started framing this as an interdependency in our strategy where, you know, you either can show high a la carte prices, which that then allow or sort of incentivize an upsell to like membership, or you can be showing low price competitive a la carte prices to boost cash sales and revenue. And the tests that we started to run afterwards, like bore out these ideas of testing both elements of strategy together to get a sense of their, you know, cumulative effect on performance. So, you know, all of that has helped develop a deeper understanding of the original ideas that I started to, that I worked on in the dissertation. Mm-hmm. And all of that is to say that I think we really, you know, we have an obligation to test and validate our ideas in practice. And, you know, I'm biased in this regard, obviously, but, you know, I think there are many avenues to do that today. Mm-hmm. You know, there's many opportunities to collaborate with companies on field experiments. You know, even if you're working on observational data sources with like a data science organization or related, or even traditional participant observation methods, you can potentially, you know, yield new insight for, you know, the company's leadership based off of your outsider's perspective, right? So, you know, I think it's a disservice to the community in your own time and potential if you only pursue, you know, audiences that are just the readership of, you know, potential journals. I think I've probably said a lot there, so I'll pause there.
And I think that's really, really very interesting. I think, from my own perspective, relative to what you're talking about, like testing different strategies at the same time, on my own end, have always wondered from a research perspective how we study different resources independently. And usually in practice, firms have to juggle multiple resources, and maybe there's a lot more need to begin to tease out how these work out in real life in terms of these interdependencies. We're going to move on to Jorge. Do you mind sharing with us what you think that role is like, and in terms of bridging that gap between scholarly research and implementation in practice?
Yes, thank you very much. I agree totally with the vision of Sorrow. In terms of the, I would say the mindset that the formation, PhD formation provide us. I think when we receive a formation as a PhD, one of the main things is the way how you formulate research question, I think. So when you have the experience in the industry side, I think you face the problem of formulating new questions in a different way. And I think this is very useful, not only for the research or the academy side, which is always trying to formulate new questions and solve this new question or approach new responses to those questions, but also to the industry side, because usually when you are connected with the practice or the real problems in the practice, you can formulate this new question in a different way, with a different mindset, and you can obtain a new approach to those questions and obviously to those new responses, so you can innovate. My point here is the opportunity to have a PhD formation in a practitioner person provides a new approach, a new way to observe the situation and formulate new questions and provide new solutions. So it's a very, very good way for innovate in the industry side, I think.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you that even beyond innovating in the industry, it's also a very effective, I mean, we have scholars that have preached this in the past, like Andrew van der Van with engaged scholarship. It's really a very effective way as well of generating new insights, new theories that can help better explain emerging or new phenomena that we see in practice as well. And so I think that definitely is a particularly for PhD students too, a very unique, necessary way to begin to view what this engagement looks like. Andrea, we're going to move to you. What do you think that role is for scholar practitioners in terms of bridging practice and research?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I think it all plays and ties well from off and the comments that have already been made, and continuing that same interim is basically being able to have that translatable moment within the research, and being able to understand how do we take the findings from a research stream and turn that into something that is actionable for a business. And that's why I find it most helpful for me in those instances. I know a lot of times, even when I started my PhD, I had a hard time really understanding the academic language of writing. And I think that has been most helpful for me in being able to understand and translate that language and turn it into something that's actionable. And now that I do have that, it's easier for me to turn that translatable knowledge that I have into something that now I can work toward a goal or initiative from many different perspectives. So I think that's the overall perspective of where I think it really lies, is bridging that relationship. And the other part is just that practical experience itself, when it lends to academia, right? Going back the opposite way. A lot of times when you have academic research, it's based on a real, it's based on a subset of the overall understanding of the network or the industry. But when you're in that industry perspective and you have that practical side of it, you really can't, you're not filtering out as much as you would from an academic standpoint. So I think going from both ways, whether I'm translating that research finding to something that's practical and actionable for the business, or whether I'm taking that practical side of it and then being able to apply that in a way that is meaningful and also gives a lot of different perspectives as to how it gives to even the academic side of the research. So I think those are my two takeaways from that one.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think from the academic perspective, we tend to think about translating research so that practitioners can understand it. But what you're bringing up is something really important, which is maybe we also, those of us who are academics, we also need scholar practitioners like yourself to interpret problems that are being faced in industry effectively to us, so that we can do a better job of examining those sorts of problems or phenomena or whatever that research question is. That's really, really insightful for me. So given what we've just shared now, and I think, Surab, you kind of already addressed that with your example, with your dissertation, but I'd still like to hear from all of us. So I'll start with you, Jorge, then. Can you share an example or a situation where an innovative research methodology led you to unexpected insights at your work and your experience, or any collaboration you had with an industry expert and someone in academia that led to something new, something to sort of ground us in this notion, this idea of linking research and practice together so that we get a sense of what that looks like?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I don't like to personalize the conversation, but I have an example related especially with my research and practice area. As I mentioned before, I have been working in intellectual property for many years. The intellectual property industry is a very traditional industry related mainly to the law firms and lawyers. So especially for countries like Chile, for example, which are developing countries, the intellectual property has been observed as a tool in a very traditional way. Mm-hmm. Most of the companies understand intellectual property just for as a tool of protecting their innovation, but most of them don't think intellectual property in strategic terms. So when I had contacts with many clients observing this situation, I started to ask myself, what is the problem with intellectual property? How intellectual property can provide a more strategic point of view, a more strategic tools for the developing the company. So, and I realized that there was a very prominent avenue of research regarding IP strategy. And as a practitioner, I didn't know that.
Oh, wow.
So when, and I had a very, very shocking example. For example, there is a paper, very well-known paper, written by Professor Ortiz in 1986, mm-hmm. Which solved most of the questions that I had in that moment 30 years later. So I didn't know that paper. When I started studying the problem of intellectual property and this traditional way for approaching the strategic in the industry, I knew this paper. I understood that many of the questions had already solved. So I think the situation is we need to connect the industry with this rich amount of information and research, which provide responses to many of the questions that the industry had. In my particular case, I started to study entrepreneurship, for example, and in the entrepreneurship area, I founded all the questions or many responses for my particular question. And I connect entrepreneurship with intellectual property. I have been developing a new framework for mm-hmm. using intellectual property for handle the uncertainty and change. It's a very, we can discuss in detail.
You sound very excited about it.
But my point is, there is a lot of questions, there are a lot of questions in the industry side which can be solved by the academy research. And if we put all this knowledge together, we can obviously find new ways for and accelerating the innovation in data.
Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing that. Andrea, we're going to go next, but let me say that I definitely identify very strongly with your perspective, Jorge, because before I came into academia, I had a small practice of my own as well. And I had a key question that I kept on grappling with that had to do with gaining competitive advantage through human capital, which I didn't know there was a thing until I got into the PhD program, found out about my advisor's work. And I realized that a lot of the solutions that could have helped me as I ran that practice were already written as far back as 1997. but I had no idea at the time. So this is really important. Andrea, what about you? What was your aha moment like connecting research with something you did in practice?
Yeah, great question. I think for me, a lot of my research in my program was associated with understanding capital, human capital, social capital, and how those things play a part in just overall success from a number of different perspectives. And one of the things that I really wanted to dive into is like strategic behavior around those two topics. And now that I'm actually in industry, being able to apply those when I think about those from a small business perspective, making sure that the human capital side of the business, as well as the social capital side of the business, and how do you develop strategic behaviors to be successful in those realms. So that's really where I get that aha moment. It's like building those brands or building those facets of information where we can help our partners as mentors, right, and being successful in their realm of business. So in that instance, we take a lot of those perspectives and we're able to mentor, coach, develop smaller businesses and to prepare them for more mainstream, large scale industry performance as well. So that's really how I utilize the research that I've done in the past to support those that are in the early stages of their business development.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to move on to the third question. I'm sure, I mean, Surabhi, you already shared with us your experience with your dissertation. So I kind of felt like that sort of gave us an insight into how you've been able to have that sort of impact in the field. So I'll start with you on a new question, which is from your perspective, then, what are the key elements that make academic research backgrounds applicable and valuable to industry practitioners? Do you see that continuing in the future? And if yes, how can academics and PhD students prepare and capitalize on these opportunities?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first thing I would say is, you know, when you're in the depths of the PhD program, you may not realize just how many, just like how much or generalizable, transferable skills you develop. And that's like true regardless of context, regardless of like whatever the latest hottest industry mm-hmm. trend right might be. Mm-hmm. And in reflecting in that question, I really think there's like three traits, many of which have been already alluded to, you know, earlier in this chat, and that make you unique and appealing in an industry context. So, you know, the first would be the ability to frame problems and simplify complex phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're doing that constantly, you know, in sort of the theorizing work that you do, writing the front end. And even if it's not necessarily about like citing, you know, a particular literature, it's mm-hmm. still the same skill about like, you know, when I talk to my leadership, they want to understand, you know, how is AI going to affect our pace of innovation, our content creation, and I can think back to, you know, theory or just like context that I know from the past to help them make sense of this big, messy phenomenon, right? The second thing would be a strong command of some methodology of your choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, though my methodology was quantitative, I still think that there is definitely value to bring sort of a qualitative insight as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to fall back on that can make you really valuable. And then the last is just like an ability to deliver results. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've all dealt with, you know, these big ill-structured projects and then like chasing conference deadlines, you know, those sorts of things. You want to translate that those abilities that you develop into an industry context. And, you know, the pace of work is a little faster, but it's certainly not insurmountable. And I think that it's your ability to translate it into action that really makes you stand out, especially when you're talking with companies and you want to develop a collaboration, especially in today's sort of like resource constrained environment. It's like coming in with an idea, a new framing or a new methodology, and then giving them and perhaps even helping them with part of the implementation will really make you stand out.
Thank you. Thank you. That's really, really, I mean, I think I feel like you said that really well, because, you know, there's that general saying that gets thrown at people, academics in general, which is that, oh, those who know how to do, those who don't know teach, or something like that. And I think many people, many of us, even who are still academics, some in practice also, still sort of get that, still have that mindset as though you only know how to do theoretical skills. The skills you've acquired are only applicable in academia, but in reality, they are transferable and perhaps getting much more valuable now, given the direction of technological advancement in our society now. I'm going to go to Jorge. Do you want to give this question a shot as well? From your perspective, how does that research background position you or make you valuable to your company? And you've worked for many years before even getting the PhD. What's the difference you see between that, you know, these newly acquired skills and your ability to do your job now?
Thank you. This is a nice question. And I agree totally with that you mentioned and what Sorrel mentioned before. I think what is the most important thing is the solid ground that you provide to your solutions when you have this mindset for facing the problems and to provide methodologies and new solutions. So I think there is a solid ground in order to build that solutions. And I think the challenge is to communicate. Because usually you read some kind of literature and you tend to communicate your results in the same way. But usually the industry side doesn't understand that way of communicating. So I think there is a challenge when you develop a new solution, you use your mindset, you use your formation as a PhD, trying to put your results, Sorrel mentioned before, to put your results in a way that the industry side can understand without losing the deep of your research and your results.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for that answer. And that really goes back to that role of translation that Andrea mentioned earlier, as not just translating academic research into language that practitioners can understand, but also practitioners translating, understanding the real hands-on problems that practitioners are facing through scholar practitioners. Andrea, do you want to give us a couple of thoughts on the same thing? Which one of those skills do you see as valuable to practitioners as well? What would you like to add to this topic?
Yeah, good question. For me, I think the some of the key elements there would be critical thinking. Mm-hmm. Critical thinking is so important when it comes to the practical world where you don't really have a lot of those instances where you're thinking through it from a more parsimonious thought process versus an actual. I think that's where it really lies, and how you have to really think through real life experiences and not those that are more abstract. I think that's where it really pays a part in that. And the other part would just be adaptability. Mm-hmm. the ability to adapt in practical, it is a skill that you will find yourself very successful with, and an ability to continue to see your career catapult if you are able to assess those skills as well. Also bringing that technical side of it, right? That methodology, research, being able to assess data sets and how do you take what you're seeing there and turning it into something practical, meaningful, actionable, and then carrying those things out. So I think those are some of the key elements that are really, really supportive. The other side of the business that we really don't talk about a lot, but is very, very helpful as well, would be the network. the community that you build on both sides and how you're able to continue to strategically think through some of those abstract thoughts or some of those practical from either side, and how do you apply those in a way that is meaningful for both sides and moving forward with a, maybe you're helping with the academic research topic or the other way. They're both very helpful and influential in your success and overall moving forward with your career. And then lastly, I would probably say just the collaboration, learning to collaborate from an academic standpoint is just as important, even in industry, because there's not a lot of individual independent work sets when it comes to those larger data sets or those larger challenges that you may be facing or you're trying to forecast for. So I think that's, again, some of the skills that you learn as an academic that are necessary even in the practical side of moving forward.
All right. Thank you so much. That's really very interesting. One of the things that, at least from my own personal experience, and I'm sure many of us who are in academia who are on the call today, we also have quite a number of practitioners too, is that the very uncomfortable experience you have going to conferences, and you're still, especially when you're still a student and you're trying to talk to the big professors with the chairs and everything, and having to learn how to navigate that really builds that muscle, right? Because you do it at least once or twice a year. It builds that muscle for you so that when you go into practice, then like if you're engaged in business development or something like that, it's easier for you to do. But also more importantly, the network of people is like two groups of resources that you can draw from when you begin to answer questions or challenges in there. So that is really wonderful. We're doing really well on time. At the beginning, I did mention that we're going to have questions in the chat. And I see that a few questions have been put into the chat right now. And I see some conversation is already ongoing. I'm going to start off with Louise. I saw that you have a couple of points there that you and Surab have been talking about. Do you want to just jump in real quickly and just give us a synopsis of what that conversation is before we move on to the next question?
Do you want me to ask my question? Was that it?
Yes.
I just wrote in the chat. Often there are PhD students, young scholars of STR who are wondering how can they use this in thinking about their PhDs. And so I put in here that it's a great point that was made that you should make work closely with firms, and that will help you learn or do field experiments. But I know many PhD students are hesitant to contact companies or find it difficult to get access to companies. Mm-hmm. And so I was asking if you had advice in terms of how to get access to companies, if you are thinking about that as an avenue to make your research more impactful or relevant.
Yeah, totally. It's a wonderful question. And I think we all have had that experience of during our PhD programs with that sort of dilemma. And for me, what I found to be particularly fruitful was leveraging my own personal network of friends. And so as I wrote in the chat, my second year paper was based on a field experiment that really came out of a discussion that I was just having from one of my friends from undergrad. He's not in applied economics, business management. He's just a engineer. And I was just talking about some of the problems that I was interested in. And he was saying, oh, actually, our management has been thinking about similar things. Let's keep chatting. And then eventually that led to a series of conversations that then led to the field experiment. So, I mean, I think the takeaway there is, don't be afraid to sort of evangelize, talk about your ideas with your network. And that's how you can avoid that problem of like, reaching out cold to a company, because you've got a friend in that company, they can vouch for you, hopefully, if you're a good friend. And that's how you can sort of get an audience. And that was useful for me, at least.
Awesome. I think that's a really good answer. And it also suggests to me, Andy, that maybe one of the things that can emerge from this forum, from this conversation as we're having it, is some sort of platform where when companies have questions they're interested in answering, and they may not have those sorts of technical skills in-house, we have some sort of database or something, or I don't know, some platform newsletter, I don't know what, where we can gather those sorts of needs and then send them out to our academic community. This which will foster, so these are people that are already in it. It's going to foster making those connections a little easier as well. I see that there's a second question in the chat that Andy says is a great question. And that's by Fabian. He says, at what point in your PhD journey did you realize that your research actually could be relevant and actionable for business? Andrea, do you want to take a shot at this one?
Yeah, great question. For me, I actually began with a question that I had. As Jorge, I also have multiple years of experience in industry. So I wanted to think about something that would be impactful from a academic side, finding that, as we know and love, that small spot in the middle of where research has began and where the next one picks up, where is that gap in the literature? So I was able to capture a gap, but I was also able to answer a question that was also something that was important to industry as well. So I kind of captured that from the beginning for me. And as I continued that conversation or continued that research, it began to become more and more important for me to capture why this is important and figure out how to best answer that question. And also as you begin it or you begin your PhD, your dissertation or whatever you're writing at that moment, a lot of times you do find things that you are excited about. And I do encourage that as well. But when you find something that you're excited about and you're also moving literature forward or moving the concept forward, I think that gives you that additional level of drive to continue that. So I know that for me, that's where I really began. It's from the beginning. I knew that I wanted to solve real world problems, but also assist in understanding the gaps in the literature as well.
So that's great. So you already had an idea of a research question before starting the PhD, which is valid, but some people also start the PhD, but they're not quite clear on the question. I'm wondering if Jorge or Sorob, maybe you guys had a different experience from that perspective. Did you have a clear-cut question or did you find the question as you were in the PhD program?
Yes, in my case, I had an intuition about the existence of a gap in the knowledge in the matter that I work. So I decided to look in a PhD program the answer for that gap. So in my case also, I started at the very beginning of my PhD with an idea in my head. But I think when a student is already doing its PhD, I think it's important to be curious in terms of the keep some proximity with the industry problem, because today we are in a very good moment because many of the industries are looking for solutions in the universities, in the academy, you know? So if a student who has not a very clear idea about the answer or the question that he would like to solve, I think the most important is to be curious in order to be close to the necessities or need of the industry. So my recommendation is to be alert. No?
Mm-hmm. All right. Great, thank you. What about you, Sorob? What was it for you? Did you have a clear-cut question at the beginning, or did the research interest become clearer as you went through the program? I think this is a very important question because I know students in general struggle with this a lot too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I definitely didn't have a clearly defined question or gap or anything like that at the onset of my program. I just had a general interest. You know, I also was a field switcher. You know, I had this background in mechanical engineering, generally interested in project management, started technically in the operations management department and then evolved and, you know, eventually migrated into the strategic management field. So I think there's a lot of time to Jorge's point, there's a lot of time for curiosity, exploring, and you know, to sort of keep you grounded in terms of the value of your questions. That's where, it just comes back to this idea of like socializing your ideas, talking to many different audiences. I understood the practical relevance of my ideas when I would chat with friends of my network, being like, oh yeah, that's actually something that's important to us. But then if I just like muse on something that's not really hitting, you can probably tell pretty soon in that sort of conversation. And then, you triangulate that with things that you know might be interesting from like a literature or theory perspective. And it's kind of like, practice theory, and then trying to get like, potentially an empirical setting in which you can kind of marry the two, right? Lots of iteration, testing and iteration.
But I think the big thing I'm picking up from that perspective is that having those conversations with people who are outside the field really helped you see its practical relevance, right? And that's how you were able, that's where you're able to say, okay, this could be actionable. This is a real life problem. And that probably, would you say that was when you began to explore what that dissertation was going to be about? Or were you already in the middle of the dissertation before you saw that? Like in terms of time frame, I'm just trying to make sure we answer this question pretty robustly.
If I open up my dissertation, it seems very neatly packaged. Like I came up with everything at the onset, but it was definitely a much more emergent process. I don't think the framing of experimental approaches to strategy and innovation didn't really come about until like the fourth year. Mm-hmm. And it was just a thread that kind of encapsulated the three projects that I was working on and was useful to help define my identity at the time. It's kind of like you have your broad interests, but there's also a degree of like practicalness here as well, in terms of the projects that do pan out, how are they emerging? And then how do you define like linkages across them?
So. Awesome. Thank you very much. I want to make sure we get to a couple of other questions that come up in here. So I'll move on to the questions that are already in the chat. And then maybe address other hands later on. So Shirley Tang says, a related question to what Louisa asked earlier, do you think industry or company experience, and I think this is important, do you think industry or company experience can sometimes be a burden? Because for example, you may have too much context knowledge, which stops you from thinking in a parsimonious way. Academic research requires abstraction. This is a really good point. What do you guys think? Who wants to tackle that? I'm going to just let...
My answer is very short. It's totally true. It's totally true. In my case, I have been working many years in the industry, 25 years. So yes, I have a lot of biases. So, but I think the PhD provides the tools for trying to avoid that biases. So I think. It's very important to understand that we have biases, and you need to do and observe the phenomena without that biases. And PhD provides that tool.
Awesome. That's great. Thank you. Any other person, Andrea, Surab, do you guys want to say something about this?
I'll just piggyback from his perspective. That is absolutely true. You do develop those biases because you are so embedded into your day-to-day practical side of things. But I think it also gives us an opportunity to kind of take that hat off and not look at things from a one-sided perspective. But when you open that door and allow other things to kind of lay where they may, you give yourself a lot more of a background or a lot more of a stream where you can be successful in finding out what may come and what is already there as well. So I think he's absolutely head on. The biases are there, but it's important to also know where your boundaries or your biases are so that you can kind of catapult from those when you are aware of those. So agreed.
Awesome. Thank you. So I think I'm going to move on from that question. Ruth Javier has a comment in the talks acknowledging that networks important when you're trying to work with corporations or have grounded research. But then generally it echoes some of what we've said earlier about how, at least right now, especially with AI and big data, companies are generally more willing to have those collaborative opportunities. We have a question from Zhao Ying Wang, who says, could you share if you have continued to engage in collaborative academic research, like publications with scholars since transitioning into industry? If yes, how do you perceive the value of such collaborations for both the academic community and your professional practice? So Rob, I'm going to throw that at you because you haven't you haven't spoken in the last round.
Sure. Yeah, so I mean, we actually have a formal mechanism at Amazon to pursue these sorts of collaborations. We call them external scholars. And they, you know, it's essentially an opportunity for folks who might not even have much background in the particular context of the business problem. And they come in, you know, maybe they are like a supply chain logistics expert or a marketing professor, somebody who does like advertising, you know, campaign measurement like really well, but mainly from like a theoretical perspective, right? So even on our team, there's, you know, we work with two external scholars that way. And then, you know, it's just trying to figure out the boundaries of, you know, the deliverables. So like we have our internal work deliverables, many of which are privileged and confidential. So those won't really, you know, go outside the company. But then we also think about ways in which, you know, especially if we're developing new knowledge that's generalizable in some way, are there conference venues? And then if it is of particular interest for, you know, the external scholar, like journal publication. And then, you know, you have to figure out like to what extent you can use, you know, internal data or not, but we even have ways around that, you know, using simulated data sets that kind of like are trained off of stuff that we have internally. So, you know, it's just really trying to be open-minded and, you know, to your point, Boogie, about like the mutual value creation, it's definitely there because, you know, the external scholar wants to test the ideas out in a new context, similar to kind of what I've been describing earlier. And then from our perspective, it's great to have a fresh perspective, echoing the last round where it's just like, yeah, we have our biases after a while in practice. So, you know, somebody maybe who comes in with a strong theoretical perspective may reorient like a course of work. So.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much for the comment and the feedback on that. I think between the last two comments, two things were taken away is yes, your practitioner background, work experience can be a bias, but it's also a real great opportunity to make a contribution to what exists in that literature. And secondly, yes, some companies like Amazon have formal ways in which you can continue to publish. Others might not. Andrea, I don't know if you can answer in 1 minute whether or not your own organization has a formal way for you to be able to continue publications if you want to. And if not, are you still doing it? And if you're yes or not, if you're not, if you are, how are you managing to do it? And then we'll close out soon.
Yeah, good question. From an academic perspective, not necessarily, but we do have opportunities to publish white papers and things just for the instance of proprietary information, as he's mentioned as well. But that is an option there. But I do also continue my research with other co-writers that I have kind of began my networking with early in the process. But we do continue those collaborations as well. So.
All right. Thank you very much. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Andy Wood. Thank you so much for giving me this time to ask your questions and for giving the time to answer. Andy, do you want to close us up?
Great, Buki. Thank you so much. First of all, can I ask you guys in the chat to just say thank you, Buki. She's done a tremendous job putting together this event and this community. And on my end, I'm really proud of what we're seeing here, which is that I think we're demonstrating the value of how our research can benefit from engaging with practitioners. And of course, I think actually more importantly, how our research can expand out to the world and influence practice. I think that's the biggest picture here. And so just to remind everybody, we got a link in the chat to sign up for the practitioner community that we've that Buki is leading and putting together. Otherwise, on behalf of the membership engagement committee of and the STR division, we're very proud that you're all here, and we hope to continue that conversation going forwards. Thank you.
Thank you. And a huge thank you to, thank you, Andy. A huge thank you to Jorge, to Shurub, to Andrea for taking the time to be here today and being willing to share your experiences with us. We do not take it for granted at all. We hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you to everyone too for coming.